That's Donaldson Toussaint Louverture Byrd II. We know him as Donald Byrd of Detroit, starting ahead of fellow Michigander Park Frederick Adams. We know him as Pepper Adams from Highland Park, Michigan, with a tune titled Kuros. Donald Byrd on trumpet, Pepper Adams, you will hear later, on baritone sax, and featuring Herbie Hancock on piano, Lehman Jackson on bass, and Jimmy Cobb on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, February the 24th, and the much-anticipated debt restructuring plan was filed in by the emergency city manager, Kevin Orr, in Detroit on Friday. It was expected before that, but apparently they got their act together because they were to have observed a March 1st deadline. So they delivered their adjustment plan, as they call it, plan of adjustment to the court on Friday. And retirees and workers and even citizens of the city wasted no time in gathering their forces because there's going to be a fight. Two such people are joining us now to tell us about a news conference that they just concluded about the reactions. Tom Stevens is with the group as Detroiters Resisting Emergency Management. Thank you, Tom, for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. And David Soule, who is a retired worker. He was a chemist with the city's water department. Thank you, David, for being with us as well.
Thank you.
Well, Tom, let me ask you about this whole concept of Detroiters Resisting Emergency Management, and tell us about the news conference that was just concluded. Tom?
Yeah.
Just tell us about the news conference that was just concluded.
Well, they're about to do the news conference
in about an
hour.
Okay.
And the point is to put forward the people's alternative plan for survival to the city. You know, as usual with complicated legal proceedings where there's a lot of documentation involved, and especially where there's a lot of money involved and a lot of lawyers involved, sometimes what's left out is the key. So I think that this will be an opportunity for ordinary people to see what's really going on, what's left out of the so-called plan of adjustment, and where we might be going from here.
Well, let's start with you. You were an attorney for the city council, especially in the area of policy analysis. What happened to you?
Well, there were deep cuts made at the beginning of the 2013-2014 fiscal year, which would have been July 1st of last year. And I was basically told, well, if you are opposing emergency management, which is this radical, unprecedented state statute for taking over cities and running them for the benefit of the banks, then there's no place for you. And so I am no longer employed by the city now.
David Soule, you are a retiree, and more than that, you are a person who was successful in bringing a lawsuit against the city. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, we knew that the attacks were coming down, and my attorney and I filed a Freedom of Information Act to get all the documents relating to bonds and interest rates that the city entered into for the last 10 years or more. And we were able to obtain over 3,000 pages of documents. And after careful analysis by many different people, this was even before bankruptcy was declared, before the emergency manager. It showed that the city was really not in debt, was not bankrupt. The city was simply wanting to divert more and more funds to the giant banks, the same banks who destroyed Detroit with their predatory mortgage lending. So the money was there, it's just who's going to get it. And now in bankruptcy, they want the retirees and the current workers to pay for their disaster. And they want to pay the banks. Most of the bonds are going to be paid 100%. Only a small portion will not receive the 100% repayment. The retirees are going to be cut, counting medical cuts and pension cuts. They want to take 70% or more of our pensions.
Could you tell us what was particularly significant about your legal victory? Besides
well,
the fact that it exposed the role of the city with respect to satisfying what the banks considered to be their debt.
Yeah, well, I think it showed that the bulk of the funds that the city takes in, education funds from the state, tax money, revenues of all kinds, were being diverted to pay high interest loans that the city contracted with different parties. And the banks were very guilty in really criminal activity. It's well known how they defrauded people in the mortgage crisis. Less well known is the fact that the city was trapped into high interest loans, bonds, to trade off on other bonds, what they call them interest rate swaps. It wasn't just Detroit. What's happening in Detroit is coming to a city near you in the future if they get away with this. So we expose the role of the banks and that it's a fight between the retirees, the workers, and the people of Detroit against the banks. And the emergency manager is working for the banks. We should have known this is a dictator imposed by a reactionary governor on the city of Detroit. Elected officials have been swept aside, and the people are being made to pay. This is a death sentence on retirees. People should know this. This is a death sentence. Michigan Constitution outlawed the death penalty, but they're imposing a death sentence on 20,000 retirees. And the Michigan Constitution constitutionally protected pensions from any cuts, and the judge threw that out. So he's collaborating in this death sentence on the retirees.
Tom Stevens, as you gather along with David Soul and many, many others this afternoon, what are you taking to the table in terms of your concern about what happens now in the aftermath of the filing of this paperwork, I should say?
Well, you know, the plan of adjustment and the disclosure statement between them are up to, I think, 560 pages. And like I say, that's only the beginning, so we'd be here all day to completely answer that. But to cut to the chase, another point that David was involved in and I was involved in and his attorney, Jerry Goldberg, was involved in is bringing to light how badly the city's restructuring counsel and bankruptcy lawyers, Jones Day, the employer of Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, are trying to sell us out. Because there was one particular attempt, actually they've tried it twice and they're in the process of trying it a third time, to buy off two Wall Street banks in particular, one being Bank of America as the parent company of Merrill Lynch and the other being UBS, the Swiss bank, to pay them for what are called interest rate swaps. And these are also clients of Jones Day, the restructuring council, the city's bankruptcy council. And so Jones Day has tried twice to cut a side deal to them, first to pay them $203 million, then to pay them $169 million in termination fees plus so-called breakage fees for getting out of these predatory interest rate swap agreements that were constructed and forced on the city and then used to milk the city for $300 million, $50 million a year for about 6 years. So the other problem that we have, the immediate problem that we have, in addition to all the other issues, is Detroit is supposedly being represented in this court proceeding right now by a law firm that has been caught already twice trying to sell out its interests to their other clients. This is a very serious problem. Of course, nobody wants to be in that kind of position. And what we learned on the eve of the release of the plan of adjustment was they've cut another backroom deal, they say, with UBS and Bank of America on the swaps, the terms of which have not been made public yet. They're not included in the plan of adjustment or the disclosure statement. The corruption and the lack of and the ethical violations involved in this are absolutely breathtaking.
I have to ask you as a lawyer, this case, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I've covered law cases before, lawsuits and so forth. I've covered the courts. And I could tell right off the bat there were just too many things out of whack here. And it is alarming to me that there seems to be no oversight, I mean, especially with the concerns and the revelations that David Soul just told us about, that there is no overarching monitoring of this process. Is that alarming to you as well?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there's so much about it that's precedent-setting. I mean, the monitoring and overarching authority is the authority of the bankruptcy court, and then on appeal, the Article I courts of the U.S. Constitution. David mentioned the constitutionally guaranteed pensions. That issue is being appealed in the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati right now as we speak. So there's going to be a lot of legal wrangling going on at all levels, first in the bankruptcy court and then on appeal. And some of these issues, including the pension issue, are probably going to have to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. But, yes, it is of tremendous concern. And no city of the size of Detroit has ever gone through anything this complicated. And when you also consider the fact that the bankruptcy itself is really just sort of like the tip of a pyramid, and underneath the tip of the pyramid you have the restructuring of the government that the emergency manager is charged with doing, firing people, laying off people, bringing in consultants, $90 million worth of consultants to tell them what to do. And then underneath that you have the base of the pyramid, you know, what's going on in the city. You know, the city itself needs restructuring. Why? Because of the decades of poor urban policy, racial segregation, deindustrialization, the capital flight, the middle class flight, the white flight. You know, several people who know what they're talking about, people like Joseph Stiglitz, people like Robert Kleina, the former Michigan State Treasurer, have looked at this and said, look, if this is the way you treat the cities, this is what you're going to get. So in recent weeks, we've had this absurd situation where with these sub-zero temperatures, water pipes are bursting all over town. We have infrastructure that needs investment, that needs work. One thing that tells you is if we were to put our resources into it, like David said, the money's there, who gets it? If we were to put our resources into our real needs, there would be enough work for generations here. And then even then, after it was done, it has to be done again. But the other thing about that that's interesting is driving around Detroit for the last couple of weeks under the polar vortex and so forth, you'll be out there 24/7 in the dark, in the cold, water flooding the streets, guys going down into holes underneath the ground to work under conditions that are absolutely awful. And while they were doing that, Kevin Orr and his clients at Jones Day were being paid up to like $950 an hour to cut their pensions and to break their unions and to destroy their working conditions and bring in contractors to fire them. I mean, it's just outrageous.
David Soul, I want to return to your court case because it was significant in that, and I listened to the cross-examination by your attorney of a representative of the company that did these swaps. What I heard patently was evidence of wrongdoing. Your attorney, Mr. Goldberg, brought that out starkly. In question after question that he asked, the answer was no. He asked, did you check with the SEC to see if any of these banks were in violation? The answer was no, I did not. Did you know that about these banks and the histories that they had? Did it prompt you to do further investigation before you entered into these arrangements? No, I did not. So if I'm hearing that, certainly the judge is hearing that. And it boggles the mind that the judge by now should have come to some conclusion that he should say, you know, wait here. Let's put the brakes on this here for a minute because we have a bunch of things to sort out. You said, and your attorney proved that in the court and certainly heard that in the cross-examination, that the city was not, in fact, bankrupt, that there was money. It's just a matter of where the money went. So if the judge is, in fact, discussing and hearing testimony about bankruptcy and he's hearing the evidence to the contrary in the court, one would think that he would kind of put the brakes on this and say, wait a minute, we have entirely different issues here that must be resolved before we go further.
Well, the judge did stop those two that Tom referred to, those two specific deals that they were trying to cut to pay off a couple of the banks. And the judge also pointed out and agreed with our contention that, in fact, there was so much criminality involved in these swaps that they might even be subject to claiming the money that had already been paid. $300 million had already been paid on these swaps. So the judge agreed with that. But Kevin Orr has said, well, we don't think we'll win that case, so we still want to give some money away. These guys work for Wall Street, and they're going to pad their own pockets, and they're going to pad their banker friends. The only question we have is, can a mass movement emerge here in Detroit and around the country, but especially here in Detroit, that says, hell no, we can't accept this. There are 20,000 retirees. There's 10,000 city workers. There's 700,000 people who live in this city who are suffering because they want to give the money to the banks at our expense. And they lie about all this stuff, all the figures. You don't believe anything you see in the papers. Most of them are lying about it. For example, the federal government has recovered, because of the criminal conspiracy and actions of the banks in the mortgage crisis, the predatory, racist, and fraudulent loans, they've recovered $13 billion from Chase. Another $37 billion is expected to be recovered from other banks for their illegal activities. Well, Detroit was hardest hit by these banks. Why isn't any of that money coming to help Detroiters, not the banks, not pay off the banks, but help restore the housing? They're taking hundreds of millions of federal dollars that were supposed to save people's homes, and they're going to tear down homes. It's bizarre what's going on here. Everything is going to the big bankers, their corporate buddies, and the attorneys, $1,000-an-hour attorneys, and they're going to unload it on the backs of us retirees. We're going to lose our homes. We've already, many of us, lost our health care benefits and our dental and our vision plans that we agreed to, the city agreed to, for our decades of work for the city. And now they're going to take whatever money there is, and they'll squeeze us and grab the pension funds and literally kill people.
Wow, that's quite profound. I wanted to ask, this afternoon again, as you go into this news conference and you talk with others, what do you believe is the greatest omission? What has this restructuring plan, this plan of adjustment, not mentioned? Where is the smoking gun here? David?
Oh, okay. The plan of adjustment never mentions the banks. 500 pages of adjustment discussion never mentions what the banks did to Detroit, even though the judge admitted all this, and they admitted under oath, under cross-examination. They don't mention that. If you don't start with that, then they don't, what can you discuss? Furthermore, what they're not revealing, because the papers are very bad about this, is that out of $6.5 billion in bonds, they're going to pay $6 billion 100% back. Only $500 million is going to be cut, what they call crammed down, to 20%. So when they say everyone's sharing the suffering, no, they're not. This is being unloaded on the retirees predominantly, and the city workers and union and their unions and their benefits next. And then the people of Detroit, it's an illusion to think they're going to renovate and rebuild Detroit. There's really no plan for that at all. They're going to put some money in some central areas where they want to gentrify, and the people of Detroit, majority African-American city, will have lost their elected officials. They're going to lose their services even further and suffer along with all of the other workers and retirees.
Tom Stevens, I want to ask about a legal question here. Is this a situation where, even though it is patently clear what has happened here, a forced bankruptcy, if you will, false information about the extent of debt. In fact, there was no debt, as David Soule was saying, that the city really wasn't bankrupt. Does it have to go through this course before and then be appealed? In other words, is this a fait accompli that the the legal process, as crazy as it is nonetheless, it is impossible to stop it. It has to go through its permutations and then sort out the details upon appeal?
I wouldn't say that it's a fait accompli. I would say that the legal process is moving ahead at such a rapid rate and on so many levels that it's part of the terrain of the struggle that has to go on. I would say that one thing that hasn't been mentioned too much here, I did mention it earlier on, but there's legal challenges, constitutional challenges to the state's emergency manager statute, which has put Kevin Orr and Jones Day in the position where they are the sole unchallenged conflict-plagued government of our city. And there will be further litigation of that, and there will be a whole bunch of political discussion. One thing that's happening, in looking at the public reaction to the plan of adjustment that I'm sort of encouraged by, there was a good interview in the Free Press with the historian Thomas Segrew, who's a Detroiter, who's written a great book about Detroit, and another one about civil rights in the North. The discussion is starting to open up. People are starting to see that the bankruptcy is not the be-all and end-all that Orr and Snyder and Jones Day and their allies and supporters and cronies have tried to paint it as. It's starting to become clear that, well, this is just the first stage of a process. And as David has really articulated in very human terms, we know what happened here. Wall Street torpedoed the global economy in 2007, 2008, and the years before that. Somebody has to be left holding the bag, right, when there's a loss of trillions of dollars of wealth, or at least notional wealth and derivatives, these swaps and so forth, these predatory instruments of financial mass destruction. Somebody's left holding the bag. What this is all about, this emergency management, this bankruptcy program, this restructuring, which is being tried out in Detroit, where people are weakest and most vulnerable, and is going to be used to the extent possible, wherever it can be used based on this experience. What is being tried out is a program to make the weakest and the most vulnerable and the poorest and the most endangered people who are innocent of these crimes pay the cost of what Wall Street did to the world economy. They're going to be left holding the bag. And so, you know, that's why it really has to be fought, and people are fighting it. It's really a moral imperative.
Well, thank you, Tom Stevens. Thank you, David Soul, for your very insightful input today. It really is an extraordinary insight into a situation, a crime being committed before our very eyes. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, you're hearing the same story, so it can't possibly be not true that there is an effort here to just sink the city, to take the city. And you hear about the enormous suffering. David Soul was talking about that basically this is a death sentence. And, you know, these things may sound very extreme. They may sound to be exaggerations, but they're not, because the quality of life in Detroit has so deteriorated, the misery index has so accelerated, that you have a situation where a city, somebody conspired, this is a conspiracy, that this city is going to be brought to its knees. And we can't escape the fact that this is a racial matter too. David Soul again reminded us, this is a majority African-American city. And so the assumption is that the casualty rate, we don't need to be concerned about that, because in any event, Detroit has served its purpose. And the people who are left behind, they'll just have to cope with the natural consequences of things. This is how life is. This is how it goes. This is the rhythm of life, you know. One day you're prospering, the next day you're in the tank. This is just how it has happened in Detroit. And there's a sense of inevitability that the suffering is to be tolerated. And we're hearing time and again that Detroit did not have to even think about bankruptcy, but of course it was an engineered bankruptcy. And it is being carried out now so viciously. These draconian cuts that are being contemplated, people who have worked their entire lives for their pensions, you know what it is to have such a steep cut in your pensions. They barely are able, they're not even making a salary at the time that they were working that was favorable compared to cities of their size. And still, now, on top of that, we have the misery index, the idea that, hey, we are going to pay off the banks. The banks are our main concern. You folks are just going to have to try and figure it out. And in the background, in the not-too-distant background, is a plan to reimagine the city, to redesign it for desirable people to live. The people who are there are not particularly desirable. They want a desirable group of people to live. And that brings me to this announcement from the White House yesterday. It will be announced tomorrow formally. The president has decided that there should be an innovative program, an innovative project that will be located in Canton Township, which is about 25 miles from the city of Detroit itself. But they're saying it's a Detroit area project. Okay. Now, the president, as you know, and we've discussed this several times, the president has not, and his administration, they have not had any real involvement in helping the situation out here in Detroit. Everybody we've talked to has been of one mind that what is happening is illegal, it's unconstitutional, it is wrong. But we have had no involvement from the Obama administration. President Obama, in fact, has not been to Detroit. He's astutely avoided it. The closest he came, and we talked about that, was when he went to Lansing, Michigan, to sign the farm bill that, of course, would make it harder for those Detroiters who are depending on the supplemental nutrition program, also known as food stamps. $8 billion would be cut out of that program. The president announces tomorrow that this project to be located in Canton Township will put $140 million into the project. And he had talked about this in his last State of the Union address, that this was one of the things that he wanted to do, which is to start these hubs. These would be like a consortium of universities and corporations and manufacturers and with researchers and developers. And this is about being incubators for high-tech projects. But here I wanted to read you what he says, what the White House said in a statement issued yesterday. And it says that, I'm losing my grip here. The phrase, the president will announce new steps for the private sector to strengthen the manufacturing sector, boost advanced manufacturing, and attract the good-paying jobs that a growing middle class requires. And I just said two words that you know make me bristle. But let's hear the kind of accolades the president will be expecting tomorrow when the announcement is made.
I'm pleased to announce America's newest high-tech manufacturing hub, which is going to be focused on the next generation of power electronics, is going to be based right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's good news. That's good news. So, that's good news. It's great. So, just like the hub in Youngstown, what we're calling the Next Generation Power Electronics Innovation Institute is bringing together leading companies, universities, and federal research all together under one roof. Folks at this hub are going to develop what are called wide bandgap semiconductors. Now, I was just schooled on all this. I'm not sure that I'm fully qualified to describe the technical elements of this. Raise your hand if you know what it is. See, we got some. For all you non-engineers out there, here's what it means in the simplest terms. Semiconductors obviously are at the heart of every piece of electronics that we use every day. Your smartphone, your television set these days, everything. Public research helped develop them decades ago. And then that research allowed commercialization, new products, new services, and obviously not only improved the economy, but greatly enhanced our lives. So we want companies to run with the ball also, but first we've got to make sure that we're also doing the research and linking it up to those companies. Wide bandgap semiconductors, they're special because they lose...
Well, okay, you get the idea. But this was greeted with great applause when the president announced this particular project in Raleigh, North Carolina, as you just heard. And of course, it is worthy of such applause. It is great that the president would get that energy to spark these hubs of research and development. And the money, by the way, is coming from the Department of Commerce and the Department of Defense and the NASA program and other governmental agencies that will direct their money to these hubs, and these hubs will concentrate on different high-tech projects. Well, that's great. I think that is fantastic. Tomorrow, he's going to talk about the one that I mentioned earlier, the one in Canton Township, and they keep saying it's in Detroit. It is not in Detroit. Canton Township is a suburb of Detroit, and $140 million would be directed there. Let me make myself clear. I think, well, as you know, I've been talking about employment and jobs being the number one issue, of course. This president, however, insists on insulting the American public by talking about this obsessive need that he has, and of course it's all about politics. He is there to do what he needs to do for the middle class. For the middle class. I've talked about this before, and every time I hear this just plain stupid reference, it drives me crazy, because it is the Obama administration and the president's own thinking about the priorities of class dictating the level of performance. Certainly, this president did not ask only middle-class people to vote for him, and certainly not only middle-class people did vote for him. But there has been no discussion from this administration on a comprehensive jobs program. And I could appreciate that it is a good idea politically speaking, to earn your political points in a midterm election year going into 2016, where the Democratic Party has its plans about dominating both the Senate and the House, I could understand how these programs, notice nobody's calling them pork barrel programs, but I could understand how these programs would generate an affinity to the Democratic Party. Raleigh, North Carolina is not a Democratic stronghold. It's a Republican stronghold, but we understand the tactic there. The tactic is to convert some people who are on the line and say, look, I don't make any distinctions about whether you're Republican or Democrat, but you must remember that I brought this to you. And you will have all these communities that will be part of these different consortiums would be grateful. The universities would be grateful. The corporations would be grateful. The people participating in these programs will be grateful. And the people who eventually will get jobs will be grateful. Huge, huge return on investment there. This president, however, and this is the symbolism of it. This is why it riles me. You have a city of Detroit that you have just written off. You're not even concerned about it. Your vice president came to town to the auto show and to recommend that people come down to see these wonderful cars and how great, I mean, fantastic American cars. Of course, they're not being produced in Detroit anymore. They neglect to mention that. But the president puts a $140 million project next door to the city that is in the process of trying to find its way out of the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the United States. The juxtaposition of these two things is not lost on me. And I think we need to start, we really need to appreciate the fact that there's something wrong with this president's priorities and his way of thinking. Or maybe this is just the way he thinks and people are slow to catch on. But imagine that. Tomorrow the announcement would be made. One is going to go to Detroit. They say it is not Detroit. Again, it is Canton Township, which is about 25 miles from Detroit, and the other will be in Chicago. You see the cynicism there? Again, great idea, wonderful idea. He's going to reward Rahm Emanuel, so Rahm Emanuel is going to have something to say to the people who can't stand his guts. See, I brought something to Chicago, and it is from my old friend, for whom I was the chief of staff. And look, I'm bringing stuff to Chicago. They're actually going to try and convince people that these jobs, which are for quote, the middle class, unquote, are actually theirs as well to get. It is insulting on so many levels, I could hardly express myself. You don't get involved in Detroit. You do nothing there for the people. You leave them to the devices of whatever whims and fancies that an emergency city manager being imposed on the city, whatever he decides goes. Suddenly we have no concern about constitutional rights or constitutional law, the rights of people to be properly represented by the people they elect. You're not concerned about any of that. Your Justice Department doesn't even see this case. We hear Bank of America, one of the greatest offenders, being one of the banks we talk about all the time, just agreeing to pay billions of dollars in fines because they're making out literally like the bandits they are. Okay? Your Justice Department is content to just accept the fees and the fines and say, well, okay, just don't do it again. This is the bank that played a major role in the, quote, bankruptcy, unquote, of Detroit. The federal government here, and bankruptcy is a federal matter, you just heard, there's no oversight of anything really happening here. So it's all contained. It is decided how this thing would all play out. It is decided that the people who can afford it the least are the ones who are going to be hit the hardest. You've taken no interest in what is happening in Detroit. After, by the way, this is long after you bailed out the auto industry, you bailed out General Motors, and you lost $10.5 billion on that deal. You lost several billions more bailing out Chrysler and preparing Chrysler. Your money, taxpayer money, allowed Chrysler to get on an even footing so that it could sell itself to Fiat. So U.S. taxpayers' money essentially has given rise to a foreign auto company owning an American company. And neither of them is in Detroit anymore. But that's what you did. You bailed out the people, the corporations. You bailed them out. You had no problem taking billions of dollars in losses. And these folks in Detroit are literally there's nothing they seem to be able to do. Who are they? They're complaining. Nobody's hearing. Wrongs are being committed. It doesn't matter. And the president still carries on with this notion, this electioneering, a stupid electioneering theme, that he is about the middle class. Well, I say, if that's the case, then the people who are not middle class, people who have come to realize based on the way they're treated and the so-called opportunities that are not available to them, they ought to react. If you're not middle class, then this party is not for you. This president has not been for you. He ran with this whole idea that he is for the middle class, and it's a theme that he has repeated over and over and over again. So if he's not for the middle class, there's no reason for the working class and the working poor and the unemployed to pay attention to this guy and his party. Leave him alone. You know, it says something that Minister Louis Farrakhan, who kept the Savior's Day annual observances that they have for the 89th year, celebrated it in the city of Detroit. And it was interesting that seated behind him as he was speaking were the congressman, okay, John Conyers, who has not had very much to say about the city. They're sitting behind him, and they're supposed to be the leaders. The symbolism there was, here's Minister Farrakhan, who comes into Detroit and speaks to the issue and says, we, because the Nation of Islam started in the city of Detroit, we are going to come back here. and we are going to build our homes and businesses here. We will return to where we started in 1930. And his presence was what commanded the presence of one of the senior most congressmen coming out of Detroit. These folks are not accessible to people, so isn't that ironic? You would show up because you know that this is a community where you will pay a price for ignoring their community, ignoring them. You can't do that and get away with it. But the political leadership pretty much has taken off. Not even for symbolic reasons do they show up and get involved. So it took Minister Farrakhan coming to Detroit to get John Conyers to actually show up and bear witness to the fact that something awful is happening in his district. Folks are in trouble, and we're in great trouble because we just refuse to just put our feet down. This president is openly insulting people by telling them he's for the middle class. Basically, he's saying, I am not for you. I am not for you. I know who I'm for. And when you look at it, you see the consistency of his actions. He has been consistently for this ephemeral grouping called the middle class. He is not for people in the urban areas. You're getting the levels of meaning I'm talking about. He's not talking about black folks. He's not talking about Latinos. He's not talking about unemployed people. He's not talking about working class whites. He's not talking about working poor people of any type. And he dares to say this even in the news release from the White House. He is concerned about those projects that will generate the well-paying jobs, the high-paying jobs that the middle class requires, he says. And along the way, he is able to be inventive enough to allocate hundreds of millions of dollars of federal funds in order to support those middle-class communities with these so-called high-tech research projects. So you will hear the president talking tomorrow in rather glowing terms about this accomplishment. And yes, I mean, in and of itself, it is an accomplishment, I'm sure. Somebody would want such a thing to happen. Again, I'm not saying that these things should not happen and those communities should not get these projects and should not have these jobs. Not at all. I'm saying that this president, in the fifth year of his second term, right? In his second term in office, is absolutely devoted to ignoring the very evident needs of a vast majority of people. He's just ignoring them. He can't see them. He can't hear them. But he knows where his allegiance ought to be, and he sees to it. And people need to get real about this. We really need to understand. He's not joking. He's not kidding. He's not being odd. He started out this way. He was made to start out this way. Go to the middle class. Tell everybody, you know, go to the middle class. In fact, on my Facebook page, I have a picture of the president holding up a book. A pamphlet, a Democratic Party pamphlet, a kind of manifesto about his dedication to the middle class. So right from the beginning, he has written off most of the people who voted for him. And the question has to be, well, what else would it take for people to realize that it is just plain stupid to continue to hold out hope that their lot will change with this president and with the Democratic Party? This party is absolutely, it has no common feeling anymore for working people and suffering people. It is ideologically in sync with the Republican Party about this notion about if you work hard and whatnot, you can get where you need to go. So wait for the big fanfare tomorrow. It surely will come. And it will be touted as, here is my thumb in your eye, Republicans. Here's what I could do, and here's what I did do in your states. I have gone into your states, and I have captivated the folks, and I'm throwing money around like crazy. And you know quite well that that zeal belongs across the board. You have no response. You have no ideas. You have no programs. You have no solutions to the problems that are endemic in the United States. The economy is bad. Unemployment for African Americans is at the highest it's been since the 1920s. You have poverty. You have, the president himself points to the inequality, income inequality, he's calling it. You have poverty and hunger at record levels. You have people who are now described as missing workers. These are people so dejected, so depressed, that they don't even want to look for a job anymore because the jobs don't exist. We see the economists pointing out that for every job available, at least 3 to 4 people will not get it. So, let's remember that Detroit is a lesson that's an ongoing lesson in how, in this still racist America, you can have 2 black men, one who is installed as the city manager and one who was elected as the president of the United States, carrying out the same segregationist backwards program to annihilate their own folks. That's the lesson. That's the black history lesson I want everybody to understand. That's a black history lesson for everybody. Just everything black ain't necessarily beautiful. So we'll join with each other tomorrow. Tomorrow is our open forum day. I want to encourage you to send in your thoughts about whether it stays on Tuesday or Friday. I've got quite a bit of feedback on that, and I'll make up my mind this week. But it's running really nicely, the voting process. So, put your 2 cents in. Would you prefer to do it on a Friday or on a Tuesday? And let me know. It would be great. Certainly, we could drop me a line. Let me know what your thoughts are, just the same. I like to hear from you. LeadStories@gmail.com or LeadStoriesWithYouTreeSLead on Facebook. Stay tuned. Coming up right after this program is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. All right, write me and vote. Do we want to move it? I'm all about taking your thoughts into consideration. So if you want this moved to Friday, I'll say okay. You move it to Friday. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.